Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a free, daily, 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Voice of America in Washington. Today on the program, we report on the growing problem of resistance to antibiotic drugs in the United States. The drugs help people with infections. Experts believe more than 20,000 people die every year from infections that cannot be treated because they are not affected by today's antibiotic drugs. Then, you will hear Jonathan Evans' weekly technology report. This week, he tells us about ransomware, the malicious software that locks up a computer until its owner pays money. The Federal Bureau of Investigation says ransomware is spreading in the United States.
Ransomware looks for user-generated content, Word documents, spreadsheets, pictures.
And later in the program, as always, we will present The Making of a Nation. Every day here at VOA Learning English, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. American Peggy Lillis thought she had a stomach virus, but her condition was much worse than she thought. She had become infected with what researchers call a superbug, Clostridium difficile-related infection, or C. difficile. It is one of the fastest-growing superbugs. Ms. Lillis had been given antibiotics after receiving care for her teeth. Doctors believe the medicine killed good bacteria in her body. They believe this made it easy for her to be infected with C. difficile. She died within days of being infected. 15-year-old Niall Moss of California went to a hospital for medical tests. Within a few days, he died of pneumonia. The young man had become sick with methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA. It is known as the hospital superbug because people who get MRSA are often infected with it when they are in a hospital. Joshua Nahum went to the hospital after he was injured while skydiving. His health started to improve during his hospitalization, but he became infected with a virus. Very few or no antibiotics have been developed to fight the gram-negative infection from which he suffered. Like Peggy Lillis and Niall Moss, Joshua Nahum also died. Family members of the three went to a meeting last week at the White House. Experts gathered there to talk about how to fight infections that resist antibiotics. Dr. Tom Frieden is the head of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. he spoke about the victims of improper use of antibiotics. He also talked about the lack of drugs to treat some infections. The Centers for Disease Control estimates that about 50% of all antibiotic prescriptions are not necessary. It says the willingness of doctors to give such drugs to patients increases the risk that people will get C. difficile or other hard-to-fight infections. The overuse and misuse of antibiotics leads to stronger bacteria, ones that can resist medical treatments. The CDC estimates these drug-resistant bacteria cause 2 million infections and about 23,000 deaths each year in the United States. Dr. Frieden said that if antibiotics are no longer effective, doctors will not be able to care for the 600,000 Americans who are treated for cancer each year, and doctors will not be able to help people who need new organs or who just need routine medical care. He told the gathering that if changes are not made to the way antibiotics are prescribed, the time may come again when, in his words, simple infections could kill. In March, President Barack Obama launched a 5-year, $120 billion program to fight antibiotic-resistant bacteria. The plan calls for officials to more closely watch for outbreaks of antibiotic-resistant infections in human beings and animals. It also calls for testing to identify antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And it provides money to help researchers more quickly develop new antibiotics and vaccines. Representatives of more than 150 food companies, stores, healthcare systems, and drug makers attended the White House gathering. They talked about ways to limit the amount of antibiotics given to humans and livestock or added to animal feed. Tyson Foods has promised to stop giving human antibiotics to its chickens by September 2017. Another company, Walmart, is asking its food suppliers to use antibiotics only to treat and prevent disease in animals, not to help them grow larger. Frank Yiannis is Walmart's vice president of food safety. He said the company is asking its suppliers to give Walmart a report every year telling how they are using antibiotics, how much they are using, and why. Intermountain Healthcare said it plans to reduce the misuse of antibiotics in patients who do not require hospitalization. The group said it will cut their use by 50% for people with upper body infections. Before the gathering, President Obama signed an executive order. It directs all federal agencies to ensure that the meat sold in their restaurants comes from suppliers with responsible antibiotic use policies. Lisa Monaco is an advisor to the president. She said the government is taking other steps to fight the development of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. She said all hospitals for military veterans and other federal centers must follow CDC rules on antibiotic use. Ms. Monaco said the most effective way to fight the development of antibiotic-resistant bacteria is to reduce the use of antibiotics. She said the United States may not be taking the threat of antibiotic-resistant bacteria seriously enough. But she said it is, in her words, a serious risk to the health and security of people everywhere. And we all have to take steps to improve the way we are using antibiotics today so they will be effective when we truly need them in the future. Now, our weekly look at the latest technology news. An old internet scam is getting some new attention lately. It is called ransomware. Ransomware is a term used for a specific type of software that locks up files or access to a computer until money is paid. Earlier this year, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, issued a warning about an increase in the spread of ransomware in the U.S. Our technology correspondent Jonathan Evans tells us more now about this growing problem.
Two of the most widespread ransomware are CryptoLocker and CryptoWall. The two computer bugs are thought to have taken millions of dollars from people. The internet security company WebSense says it has found about 2 million cases of CryptoLocker. More than 60% of the cases were in Australia. Symantec is another internet security company. It says a newer ransomware is quickly spreading around the world. The bug fools people with information on the popular television series Breaking Bad. The bug secretly searches out certain types of files in computers and encrypts them. Computer users will not be able to open those encrypted files without the decryption key. And only the person or persons responsible for the bug have the key. Users then receive messages that their files are now unavailable. They are told their files will remain unavailable unless the user pays a fee in exchange for the decryption key to unlock their documents. John Shire is a security expert at the cybersecurity company Sophos. He says ransomware looks for user-generated content, Word documents, spreadsheets, pictures. These could be pictures of your child's first birthday, videos of your honeymoon, financial spreadsheets of your small business, files that you really care about. The price to have those files returned is usually between $300 and $600. Once the payment is made, the user is given the decryption key. Ransomware bugs have a relatively simple design, but they often have a complex encryption standard. That makes them almost impossible to break without the decryption key. Ransomware targets all types of computer systems, personal, business, and government. But Mr. Shire says the most success the bad guys are seeing is from personal computer systems. Little can be done once a device has been infected. But there are ways to protect against ransomware or limit the damage done once infected. John Shire says the best way is to make many copies of all of your files and save them in different locations. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Thanks, Jonathan. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. The Making of a Nation is coming up next. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from the VOA Learning English headquarters in Washington.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we look at the presidential election of 1988. Ronald Reagan was finishing his second term. He was America's 40th president and one of the most popular. During his 8 years in office, many Americans did well financially. Many felt more secure about the future of the nation and the world. The possibility of nuclear war with the Soviet Union did not seem as great a threat as it had in the past. The Constitution limits presidents to 2 terms. So in 1988, the country prepared to elect a new chief executive. There were 3 main candidates for the Republican Party nomination. They were George Herbert Walker Bush, Bob Dole, and Pat Robertson. Bush had just served 8 years as Reagan's vice president. Dole was the top Republican in the Senate. Robertson was a conservative Christian who had his own television program. Ronald Reagan's popularity helped George Bush gain the Republican nomination. Neither Dole nor Robertson won enough votes in the primary election season to be a threat. Bush was nominated on the first vote at the party convention. The delegates accepted his choice for Vice President Senator Dan Quayle of Indiana. 8 candidates competed for the nomination of the Democratic Party. One of the candidates was Jesse Jackson, a black minister and political activist. He won about 25% of the delegates. He had also sought the nomination 4 years earlier. The Democrats chose Michael Dukakis, the governor of Massachusetts. His running mate was Senator Lloyd Benson of Texas. In public opinion surveys, Dukakis looked like a strong candidate after the party conventions. But then he began to lose popularity. Many observers said he had waited too long to launch a nationwide campaign. The candidates heavily attacked each other through campaign advertising on television. Dukakis came under attack from the Bush campaign, targeting his record as governor. Campaign ads said Dukakis had not been tough enough with criminals.
Bush and Dukakis on crime. Bush supports the death penalty for first-degree murderers. Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy in a robbery, stabbing him 19 times. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
Ads by the Bush campaign also said Dukakis would weaken America's military power. And they accused him of not protecting the environment by seeking a permit to dump sewage from Massachusetts off the coast of New Jersey.
The Environmental Protection Agency called Boston Harbor one of the dirtiest harbors in America. But not long ago, Governor Dukakis proposed a way to help clean it up by dumping Massachusetts sewage sludge off the New Jersey shore, just 106 miles from New York. Now Michael Dukakis says he wants to do for America what he's done for Massachusetts. New Jersey can't afford to take that risk.
I'm fed up with it. Never seen anything like it in 25 years of public life.
Dukakis fought back.
George Bush's negative TV ads, distorting my record, full of lies, and he knows it.
Dukakis accused Bush of not telling the truth about his part in the secret sales of arms to Iran to finance Contra rebels in Nicaragua. He also criticized Bush for being part of an administration that reduced social programs.
I must have been living through a different 8 years than the one that the vice president's been living through, because this administration has cut and slashed and cut and slashed programs for children, for nutrition, or the kinds of things that can help these youngsters to live better lives. Has cut federal aid to education, has cut Pell Grants and loans to close the door to college opportunity on youngsters all over this country. And that, too, is a major difference between the vice president and me.
In the end, Bush's campaign succeeded in making Dukakis look weak on crime and defense. Dukakis did not help himself with a commercial in which he was looking out of a moving tank while wearing a large helmet. Many people made fun of the ad. On Election Day in November, Bush defeated Dukakis by almost 7 million votes. George Bush was sworn into office on January 20, 1989.
No president, no government can teach us to remember what is best in what we are. But if the man you have chosen to lead this government can help make a difference, if he can celebrate the quieter, deeper successes that are made not of gold and silk, but of better hearts and finer souls, if he can do these things, then he must. We as a people have such a purpose today. It is to make kinder the face of the nation and gentler the face of the world. My friends, we have work to do.
George Bush was the son of a United States senator and had led a life of public service. He joined the Navy when America entered World War II. He flew attack planes. He was just 18 years old, at that time the youngest pilot the Navy ever had. He flew many bombing raids against the Japanese in the Pacific. He was shot down once and rescued by an American submarine. George Bush came home from the war as a hero. He became a university student and got married. He and his wife, Barbara, then moved to Texas, where he worked in the oil business. He ran for the United States Senate in 1964 and lost. 2 years later, he was elected to the House of Representatives. He ran for the Senate again in 1970 and lost again. But by that time, he had gained wider recognition. Over the next 8 years, he was appointed to a series of government positions. He was ambassador to the United Nations. He was chairman of the Republican National Committee. He was America's representative in China before the two countries had diplomatic relations. And he was head of the Central Intelligence Agency. In 1980, Bush ran against Ronald Reagan for the Republican nomination for president. Bush lost, but became Reagan's running mate. After two terms as vice president, he felt ready to lead the nation himself. The new president took 7 foreign trips during his first year in office. In Europe, Bush met with the other leaders of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. He proposed a major agreement on reducing troops and non-nuclear weapons in Europe. The Soviet Union considered his proposal an important step in the right direction. In June of 1989, the Chinese government sent tanks and troops to crush pro-democracy protests in Tiananmen Square in Beijing. Hundreds and perhaps thousands of demonstrators were killed. President Bush took some steps against China, but many critics felt the sanctions were not strong enough. In Central and Eastern Europe, communist governments also faced protests. Since 1987, Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev had let countries in the Warsaw Pact experiment with political and economic reforms. But those reforms were not enough to stop the fall of communist governments in one country after another. In the summer of 1989, President Bush visited Hungary and Poland. Both nations were trying to develop free market economies. Both were suffering as they moved away from central control. In Poland, the leader of the Solidarity Trade Union, Lech Wałęsa, led the push for reform. He would later become president of a democratic Poland.
Hier ist das erste deutsche Fernsehen mit der Tagesschau.
November of 1989 brought a dramatic expression of the changes taking place in Eastern Europe.
Guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren.
On November 9th, East Germany opened the wall that had divided it from the West since 1961.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, reporting tonight from Berlin.
From the Berlin Wall specifically, take a look at them. They've been there since last night. They are here in the thousands. They are here in the tens of thousands. Occasionally they shout, Die Mauer muss weg, the wall must go. Thousands and thousands of West Germans come to make the point that the wall has suddenly become irrelevant. Something, as you can see, almost a party on. How do you measure such an astonishing moment in history? The East German government said tonight they were going to make more openings in the wall, at least a dozen more, put bulldozers right through the wall so that more people could cross to the West. The East German communist leadership tonight said there'd be a new election law guaranteeing secret elections which the rest of the world could monitor. And only 24 hours after East Germans were told they could go anywhere, anytime, the Soviet Union said, that was a sensible move.
Within days, citizens and soldiers began tearing down the wall as the world watched with hope for a new era of peace.
Now, what's it feel like to be standing on top of the wall?
It's incredible for me. It's I can't describe really my feelings. It's something unreal for me.
If there is someone who sleeps for 8 weeks and you told him what happened here, he thinks you're crazy. It's unthinkable.
The fall of the Berlin Wall pointed to the end of the Soviet Union, the end of communist rule in most of the countries in the former Soviet bloc, and the end of more than 40 years of the Cold War between the East and West. The presidency of George Herbert Walker Bush will be remembered as the time during which these world-changing events took place, as well as the beginning of the Persian Gulf War with Iraq following Iraq's invasion of Kuwait. We'll look at those and other events in the Bush presidency, both at home and abroad, next week. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.